This program is intended for a print impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Community News, a program sponsored in part by the Lions Club of Rutland and thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. It's Friday and it's the 26th, and in the next half hour, we will be bringing you news from the Landmark. This is Paul Nadeau. Thank you so much for supporting the Audio Journal and listening to the Landmark. Thank you. Let's start this week with a story from Ken Cleveland, Landmark correspondent, and comes from Princeton. Historic Princeton School raised. Like many old schools built strong and lasting longer than many newer buildings, the Princeton Center School, also known as Princeton Junior High School for several years, has met its end. It was demolished on June 11th. The historic structure now lives in the memories of hundreds of former students who learned within its walls. Many of them lament the loss. A giant claw took bites out of the building, exposing the classrooms and continuing until there was nothing left but debris in the main chimney. Gone were the well-worn floors and the handrails, the wood that students burnished over the decades, the blackboards, the solid stone facade. Remaining are the memories. Posts on social media reflected the sorrow former students felt at learning the fate of the school. The building had been closed for safety reasons. The town had reviewed its buildings. Many had substantial issues, including those in daily use by police and fire. With no urgent use for the old school and the lack of funds to repair and reuse the building, it was only a matter of time. It had been seen as the unlikely site for a new public building. But it took a while before voters sealed its fate with a town meeting and election votes. The demise of the Princeton Center School makes way for a needed public safety building. But its history remains with over a century of service, most of that as a school. Before the Princeton Center School, there were many district schools. Then the Goodnow Memorial Library was built in 1891 to serve as both a library and a school with classrooms on one side. The start of the 20th century dawned with the town looking for a new school. A 1991 story by Landmark reporter Phyllis Booth gave a short history concluding with its final chapter as a school. Voters appropriated $10,000 in June of 1904, to construct the Princeton Center School on Boylston Avenue. In May 1905, an additional $4,000 was raised so the structure could be built of wood rather than brick. A school barn at the cost of $750 was built to accommodate the horse teams bringing the students to school. In the fall of 1906, the school was occupied for the first time. During the 1906-1907 school year, 74 pupils attended. By 1907, a recommendation was made to enlarge the horse barns to encourage pupils living further away to stay in school throughout the school year. In 1937, the town purchased several acres of land behind the school for a playground. This WPA project stopped midway due to the hurricane in 1938. Additional land was donated by R.H. Hamilton, and the playground in the fields were completed in 1939. In 1942, the first class in the history of the town to complete the four-year high school course graduated 12 pupils, 1942. The center school housed grades 1 through 12 until the mid-1950s. In the mid-50s, grades 1 through 8 attended the center school, while grades 9, 10, well, 9 through 12 went to Wachusett. That was the state's first regional high school established in 1955. Wow. For 3 years, from 1966 to 68, Princeton's 7th and 8th graders were bused to the Holden Junior High School. Thomas Prince School opened in 1968, and that housed grades 1 through 6. In the fall of 1969, the Center School reopened as a junior high. In 1991, the Center School closed when, in addition to the Thomas Prince School, was added where grades kindergarten through 8 all attended the same school. The Center School building then found a new use, housing several organizations, but in 2017, groups such as the Council on Aging, the Princeton Historical Society, the Princeton Art Society, and the private studios left their homes and former classrooms. Because of safety concerns, a fire department detail was posted whenever anyone was in the building, as residents got a final chance to tour the building in July of 2017. And then the building was empty, declared unsafe, with an uncertain future as plans proceeded for a new use for the site. Any repair costs would be high and would only grow over time as it went without the maintenance. The need for a new public safety building and a place to put it finally overwhelmed those who love the historic school. Voters decided new facilities for emergency services operating from buildings with their own long list of problems was the best option. The plans and costs would not even allow incorporating the iconic facade into a new police and fire building. So time came to surrender the Princeton Center School to the sands of time, to borrow an old phrase, and its collection of history, its history to the collective memories of the town. Now, the final town work order, the town posted plans just before the final week started on June 11th. The demolition permit for the Center School was issued yesterday, and demolition is expected to start today. The building should be substantially down within a few days. Cleanup and removal of pavement and removal of the footings and foundation walls will follow the building demo. We anticipate the process will take approximately 2 weeks to complete. General contractor for the new building is expected to mobilize immediately following the completion of the demolition. At that point, residents will no longer be allowed anywhere on site, including the field. Hazardous material abatement had started on May 4th. The $298,460 demolition contract was awarded to SNR Corp of Lowell, which with the work starting on June 11th. The $13,877,330 contract with the general contractor, P&P General Contractors of Charlton, was signed on June 10th. So it's amazing how quickly they move and how quickly that site probably will be forgotten. But for all it had memories of it, it must have been kind of a sad thing to hear. Paxton has set aside August 10th for its special election. This comes from Ken Cleveland, the Landmark correspondent. Select Board has set a special town election for August 10th, focused on a vote for an override. Now, the proposed $386,289 override requires passage by two-thirds of the voters at the special town meeting, June 29th, as well as majority vote in the August 10th special town election. The election will be in addition to the state primary in September and the general election in November, keeping voters busy. Combining the town election with the state primary was considered, Chair Julia Pignatori said at the June 15th select board meeting. But there were too many complications in holding them together, including the separate ballots that would be required, potentially mix-ups, and having to staff separate check-ins, all the while not saving any significant cost. In addition to the August 10th, was the latest date that we could do without starting to run into a person early voting at the town hall for that primary, Pignatori said. There will be a second choice for voters with an empty recreation commission position on the ballot for the next election. That two-year term would fill a vacancy caused by the failure to elect at the last annual town election. The board balanced the special election timing based on deadlines. The actual question on the ballot will be decided after the special town meeting. Are you confused? We will probably have to meet shortly after our special town meeting in order to come up with that ballot question, Pignatori said, depending on how the town meeting goes. In other businesses, the select board added two members to the Anna Maria College Transition Advisory Committee, one to be appointed from the Finance Committee and one from the DPW/Water Board, bringing the total number of members to 11. The board appointed Jeff Wenzel from the select board, Town Administrator Robert Burbick, Jason Burgess from the Planning Board, Britt Clark from the Zoning Board of Appeals. These include Anthony Dominic from the Economic Development Committee, Michael Benoit from the Municipal Light Commission, and Brian Lawler and Tim Loring as community volunteers. The rest, a member of the Capital Improvement Planning Committee, Finance Committee, and DPW, are pending. The board also voted to accept the conservation restriction for land at 5 Camp Street that the Worcester County Land Trust is buying to open space and recreation. Colin Novick of the Trust described the plan to add the 15 acres to hundreds of acres of restricted land in Paxton, noting the benefits of preserving that land for recreation. He urged the board to sign the documents quickly so he can get them processed to benefit from a 50% match from the state. He said close to 350 acres are protected by the trust, plus other land protected from development through other means, most of it because it's not suited for building due to either wetlands or ledge. As the board signed the documents, Novick described the hike he had led the day before. It was a hike that was over 2 miles in length, and everyone came away as blown away at what's in the center and the heart of Paxton, and people probably will never think of the center of Paxton that same way again. It's just a remarkable landscape in there, Novick said. As the board signed the documents, he was just so delighted. So you're going to get some more recreation space in Paxton, which is great. It's always had nice to have some area that won't get overgrown, and hopefully get your grant from the state. We do have one obituary this week, and it's for Richard Kenneth Henderson. He was born on June 20th, 1932, and he passed on June 11th of this year. Richard Kenneth Henderson, known as Dick Henderson, aged 93 of San Diego, California, passed away on Thursday, June 11th. Dick was born June 20th in Holden, Mass. To James and Laura Clapp Henderson in 1932. He was the youngest of seven children. Dick grew up surrounded by family, hard work, and the values that would shape the kind and generous man he became. He was preceded in death by his beloved wife, Janice Grant Henderson, who passed away in 2009. He is survived by his six children, Susan, Ted, Laura, Bob, Catherine, and Martha, Martha and Margaret, as well as cherished grandsons, David and Corey. He was predeceased by his brothers, William, Robert, James, and Donald, and his sisters Marjorie and Shirley. Dick spent his early years on a farm in Holden, Mass., and he graduated from Holden High School. After graduation, he proudly served in the United States Navy as a naval air electronics technician, an experience that reflected his intelligence, his discipline, and his quiet dedication. Following his military service, he built a career in banking and became a CPA, bringing care and integrity to his work. During his service in the Navy, Dick was stationed in Chesapeake, Virginia, where he frequently visited Washington, D.C. This exposure led him to develop a deep affinity for the city, prompting him and his wife, Janice, to relocate there in the early 60s. Over the following 60 years, Dick remained in D.C. and the Maryland area, where he raised his family, advanced his professional life, and explored his various cultural interests. He spent his final 4.5 years in San Diego, California. More than anything, Dick will be remembered for the warmth he brought into the lives of others. He had an extraordinary kindness and a genuine interest in every person he met, making people feel seen, welcomed, and valued. He loved music, baseball, books, politics, and travel, but his greatest joy was always his family. The love he shared, the curiosity he carried, and the gentleness with which he moved through the world will remain a lasting and treasured legacy. A celebration of life will be held, or was held, in downtown Washington, D.C. on June 18th. If you want to, you can, in lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be made to either the Public Broadcasting Service or Matchstick Percussion. And once again, this is for Richard Kenneth Henderson, who was born in Holden a very long time ago. And I'm sure his family's going to miss him. Some news from Rutland, and it's about the 4th of July celebration. This comes from Kristen B. Payson, who is the editor of the Landmark. While Rutland's annual parade and fireworks are canceled for this year, the town is by no means abandoning its deep and abiding love of the 4th. Most of the activities for which the town are known are still happening, and excitement is ramping up. Now the schedule. Saturday, June 27th, is going to be the Junior Olympics. It's going to be held at Memorial Field. It's for ages 5 through 12. Now you register at 8 a.m. and you start at 8:30. So it's sponsored by Cub Scout Pack 141. There's going to be a volleyball tournament. It's at Memorial Field. It's for ages 13 and older. Registration at 10:30 a.m. and it starts at 11 a.m. Now that's sponsored by the Briggs family. So the rain date's to be determined. The chicken barbecue in front of the library, serving begins at 3 p.m. You can purchase tickets in advance online. This is sponsored by the Rutland Fire Brigade. Sunday, the road race at the Town Common, 9:30 a.m., kids, 10 a.m., adults. Cost is $15 for kids, $25 for adults. Registration tentatively at 8:30 a.m., sponsored by the Rutland Lions Club. Bike and doll carriage parade on the common between the churches. On-site registration starts at 11:30 a.m. Competition starts at noon. Online registration is available. The Open House and Lemonade Special. 1 to 3 p.m. at the Rutland Historical Society, Main Street. Saturday, July 4th, a celebrity pancake breakfast from 8 to 11 a.m. at the Rutland Community Center, Glenwood Road, sponsored by the Friends of the Council on Aging. I mean, who doesn't want to eat pancakes on the 4th of July? I know I do, and I probably will. This next article comes from, it was submitted by the Holden Women's Club. And title is Stanovich is Person of the Year. Jennifer Stanovich received the Holden Women's Club Person of the Year Award in late May. The ceremony was held at Val's Restaurant. Stanovich is known for her dedication to the town of Holden and for her outstanding dedication to the mission of the Wachusett Area Chamber of Commerce, where she is the executive director. The following is from her induction at the awards ceremony. Jen is someone who will step forward to fix what needs fixing and improve what could be improved without expectation of personal reward or recognition. These people make our town a community, and we are grateful to them and for them. Today we celebrate one of the many such members of our community, Jen Stanovich. Jen is a true daughter of Holden, having been born and raised here, and then choosing to raise her family here. By all accounts, she is a people person who has always enjoyed bringing people together and working towards a common goal, whatever that may be. She honed those skills as an event planner at Tom McCann Shoes, a job she loved and apparently excelled at. She learned the value of volunteerism while interning at the United Way as a student. When she left the workforce to raise a family, she applied her energy and creativity to the Rice School PTA, St. Francis Church, and the Holden Newcomers Club, where she acquired some new friends with young kids and in turn helped new residents to assimilate and become active members of the community. More than 20 years ago, she re-entered the workforce through the Holden Chamber of Commerce, where she is now the executive director. During her tenure, the chamber has grown to include the surrounding towns of Boylston, Paxton, Princeton, Rutland, Sterling, and West Boylston. It is now the Wachusett Area Chamber, which broadens the area's economic reach. To provide chamber members with opportunities for networking and support with their businesses, Jen has instituted the monthly Business After Hours, Chamber Chat, Business Showcase as shown on the Holden TV, and a radio talk show, all of which pull people together to work towards a common goal. She began the Wachusett Woman's Connection to address the unique issues of women in the business world, the golf scholarship scramble. She initiated that, and that has grown to now provide four $2,500 scholarships for college-bound high school seniors in our area. She started the annual salute breakfast to recognize people in the Wachusett towns for their impactful volunteer work. Jen has helped the annual Holden Days event to grow from Benson sidewalk sale to the vibrant gathering it is today, allowing a variety of local businesses and craftspeople to showcase their work and again to support our local economy. She continues to carry on her volunteer work through her church in the Wachusett Watershed Regional Recycling Center. The chamber provides the general public with information and guidance with the business directory, and of course, as always, its open door and her welcoming smile. If that's not enough, Jen has also started a travel group that is available to all and offers another opportunity to gather for fun, education, and camaraderie. We in Holden are the happy recipients of her knowledge in her ethics. She is proud of her talent, and it shows. We, in turn, are proud of her and accomplishments. Because of all what you have done for our town, Jen, the Holden Women's Club, is pleased to name you our Person of the Year in 2026. And you have to give her some applause because she, wow, what a busy lady to take all that time and use it in a productive way is just a feat in itself. Good job. I just read that someone in Rutland walked into the police station with some dynamite that they had found in their garage. I think probably in the future, it'd probably be a good thing to call the police first and tell them about the situation. And I think they'd probably come to you. So in the future, if you find sticks of dynamite in your garage, call the police first. Don't you show up at the police station. That causes a little bit of a panic. That's going to bring us to the end of this week's program, and I'm sorry for the preaching. This community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or Braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on the website, audiojournal.org, or you can go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, your iPad, or your Android device. I'm Paul Nadeau. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, if you got a big day this week, come on, let's have some fun with it. And as always, be careful. There's a lot of animals in the roads lately, a lot of turkeys and stuff out there. So be careful and have fun.
WICN Public Radio is a proud partner of Audio Journal. Audio Journal provides news, information, and entertainment to visually and print-impaired residents of central Massachusetts. Audio Journal broadcasts are made possible through the use of a portion of WICN's broadcast frequency. 90.5 WICN is Worcester's only NPR affiliate and the voice of arts and culture in central Massachusetts. Visit WICN.org for more info.
This is Bird Note. While many songbirds are accomplished soloists, some of the bird world's most impressive performances are actually duets. In North America, breeding pairs of Carolina wrens sing duets to strengthen their bond and defend territory. The male repeats a series of clear notes, accompanied by the female's steady trill. In Ecuador, plain-tailed wrens blend their voices so perfectly that it sounds to our human ears as if just one bird were singing. Wrens aren't the only birds that sing as power couples. In this duet of oriole warblers from Senegal, the female keeps time with a rising series of staccato notes as the male whistles along. In Central America, pairs of male long-tailed manakins team up to woo prospective females with song and dance. Researchers have estimated that the dynamic duo may perform their Toledo song up to 5,000 times in one day. An impressive vocal feat indeed. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Did you know ADA paratransit riders in Worcester, Auburn, Boylston, Leicester, Northboro, Oxford, Westboro, and West Boylston now have the option to schedule trips through the Worcester Regional Transit Authority's new online reservation system? Call customer service at 508-791-9782 or email paratransit@therta.com to begin scheduling your trip online.